famous stick.
Stick, actually.
Well, it looks a very high-tech place, this, doesn't it, until you see the pointer.
Two sticks. Well, good morning, everyone. I'm going to talk today about MHC wave propagation in the neighbourhood of 2D null points. So this talks about a sort of combination of wave theory and topology together. So I guess a little bit different from what you're used to so far. Well, the sort of motivation for this investigation that we did was that you've got coronal heating. So coronal heating is one of the key problems in solar physics at this time. And there's lots of rival theories. There's your reconnection models with current sheets and X-point collapses and the like. But there's also wave heating models, which are based on generating small length scales and then big currents and that sort of thing. And today I'm going to talk about a sort of wave heating version. From theory, predicts the existence of null points from topology and that sort of thing. And null points are important because alpha in speed goes to zero at that point. That's because null points are the point where magnetic field goes to zero. And potential field extrapolations, where you can take a photospheric magnetogram, make a potential field calculation, they actually show that there could be null points in the corona, and that this will be quite likely, depending on the sort of complexity of the field you're looking at. Okay. Well, what I'm going to do simply is just take the basic usual MHC equations. I'm going to consider a zero beta plasma, so I get rid of the sort of plasma part. And I'm just going to consider ideal MHC at the moment. So it just reduces down to very simple sort of equations. And I'm going to perform a perturbation analysis. So for that, I'm going to take an equilibrium magnetic field, which, well, unfortunately, it hasn't come up very well. But
simple X point.
It's a simple X point, so it looks, you know, something like that sort of form.
The
axes or what? So I've just taken it as z axis. So I've taken my B field as this form, sort of thing. Basically, what I'm going to do is perform a perturbation analysis about that. So I sort of take the equilibrium quantities, add a sort of perturbation part to it, and linearize. And in the usual sort of standard way, the density part decouples from the equation because I'm in 2D and I've got zero beta. And then when I non-dimensionalize, the whole equations naturally decouple into two different types of equations, one for the fast wave and one for the Alfheim wave. Okay, well, so you can see that here. If I consider a variable v, which is related to the perpendicular velocity, then I get out this set of equations, which sort of exist in the x and z plane, and that describes the fast wave. And by considering the other component, I can look at the Alfheim wave part of the system. Okay, so firstly, if you look at these equations, you can combine them together, like by taking the time derivative here, and time derivative here, and the fast wave part reduces down into a simple wave equation. So on the left hand side, you've got the t derivative part, on the right hand side, you've got the spatial derivative part, but you've got a velocity, a spatially varying velocity, where, which hasn't come out again, but where my velocity takes this form. So it's a spatially varying velocity. And that'll be really important later. In a similar way, the Alfheim wave, you can reduce it down to something that looks like this, where you remember that x and minus z are the components of the background magnetic field. Okay, so now I'm going to look at what happens in the fast wave case. Well, to start off with, I did some numerical work. So I took the equations for the fast wave and solved them using a two-step Lax-Wendorff scheme. I ran the numerical scheme in a box with certain boundary conditions. And the important thing about this is that the sort of side and bottom boundary conditions don't affect the overall evolution of the wave very much. But the important thing is that the top boundary, what I'm basically doing is taking a sort of taking the top boundary of the box and sending a wave in from the top. And basically what I do is I just take the boundary, send in a wave pulse, and then return the boundary to its original position. So a wave comes into the box, and I'm just going to see what happens to the wave. Okay. And basically what I find is that the linear, fast magnetoacoustic wave travels in towards the vicinity of the X point and bends around it. And that's because the alpha speed, which if you remember was this form, is spatially varying. And what that means is the further you are away from the X point, the bigger the magnitude of your velocity. So the whole wave comes down, wraps around the X point, and demonstrates an effect called refraction, where all the wave energy, which started off as a plane wave, is coming and focusing into this X point. And that's sort of the key result. That's one of the key results that I wanted to get across. And hopefully I can show this in a sort of movie form, where what's happening here is this is the box, and along the top boundary we have a plain linear wave like that that sort of comes down. The X point's here at zero, and well, it's not very smooth when it comes out, but it sort of comes around and wraps around the X point and wraps around again and again, focusing all the wave energy at that point. Okay? And then, well, why is that important, you might ask? Well, what happens is, because we've got a changing perturbed magnetic field and our length scale is getting smaller and smaller, where a length scale can be thought of as the front of the wave and the back of the wave, we've got current density building up. And the numerical simulations show that there's a large current accumulation at the null point. Okay? Which I hope you could see here, but basically what's happening is the wave's coming down and all the energy is being focused into the null point, which means all the current is building up there. Yeah, it works. So just like before, the wave sort of coming along this boundary, comes down, wraps around, but the important thing is because it's all being focused at one point, all the current is being directed into that point. So whereas before we had a sort of, you know, standard geometry, a sort of a setup wave, all the energy deposition is at a single point. And that's the point where we think preferential heating will occur. Okay. Just as a sort of aside, we run this as a numerical scheme, but it can also be solved analytically. And here you can just see a very sort of quick overplot of the solutions. And the numerical work and the analytical work are in very good agreement. Okay. So that's the sort of fast wave idea. With the alpha wave, in a similar way, we solved it again numerically using a two-step Lax-Wendorf scheme. This one I just ran, I ran it in a single quadrant of the previous box. And again, I took a sort of similar boundary condition, except here I only send in a pulse across half the top boundary. And the only reason I did that was it demonstrates the effect sort of better. Okay. What we found was that for the linear alpha wave, starts again at the top of the box and travels down, but this time the alpha wave follows the field lines and begins to spread out. It thins, it keeps its original velocity, but the whole wave sort of comes down and accumulates along the separatrix. So once again, you start with a wave in a box, comes down, and then it accumulates in a sort of specific spatial location. Okay. Hopefully, So you got the box, wave coming in between sort of half the thing, and it comes down and spreads out along the field lines. So remembering that this sort of quadrant is sort of the first quadrant of this, so the field lines are coming round like that. And basically the wave comes down. I'm really sorry, it's quite hard to see on here, but the wave is accumulating along the separatrix, which is sort of the x-axis in this case. Okay. Once again, we've got a perturbed magnetic field that's changing, so we've got current build-up. And in the alpha case, we've got a Jx and a Jz component. And what we found is that Jx spreads out along the field accumulates along the separatrix and increases in time. So all the current build-up is along the separatrix, which is sort of very, very interesting. And from our analytical work, we can see that in this case, in this linear case, Jx increases exponentially. And with Jz, we found again it spreads along the line. We found that Jz spreads out along the field lines, but this time it decays in amplitude, and in fact decays away exponentially. Okay, so hopefully you can see for Jz, Jz comes down and accumulates along the separatrix, this line. Jx here is sort of takes a discontinuous form. That's because of our initial sine wave that we sent in. But the idea is that wave comes in from the top, and all the current accumulation is along the separatrix. Okay, and just to compare to that, we've got Jz, and in this time, Jz builds up, starts to spread out along the separatrix, but decays away to practically zero. Decays away exponentially to practically zero. Okay. So moving on to some conclusions, and this is a real this is the part that I want you to take away, basically. We found that when you have a fast magnetoacoustic wave propagating in towards a sort of simple 2D extra point, we find that the wave wraps around the null point due to refraction. And what happens is you have a large current density accumulation at that null point, and that build-up is exponential in time. It's probably due to the linear nature of the system, and that will change, but all the wave energy focused in at this one point. And similarly, for the Alfheim wave, we find the wave propagates down along the field lines and accumulates along the separatrix, and the wave thins and stretches, and because of that, you get all the current build-up along the separatrix. Okay? Right, and now you might ask, well, all the work carried out here was ideal, but all the energy is deposited at either the null point or the separatrix. And what will happen is, no matter when you include resistivity, no matter how small the term, eventually it will become non-negligible and become important. So for the X point, all the energy is at the null point, and that's where the wave will be dissipated. That's where you'll get the heating. That's where you'll get all the energy release. And for the Alfheim wave, it comes down, accumulates along the separatrix. And again, that's where you'll get the heating. That's where all the energy release will be. Okay, and that's about it. I've just sort of leave up a few points for summary and for questions and that sort of thing. But thank you very much.
Obviously going to be interesting to see what happens when you extend this to 3D cases and try and understand what happens at 3D nulls and the long separators and things like that. Yes, Francesco?
No, just a comment. It seemed to me that a number of these results were obtained by Sirovatsky in the 80s, for example, the ruffling of the magnetosonic wave around the null point. Russian literature of the 80s, a number of these results.
Right, and Bulyanov has done quite a bit as well.
Yeah, so we looked at those results, and yes, that work is very similar to this work I presented today. This is the start of a sort of investigation into more null points, like two null points, three null points, and that sort of thing. But in Bulyanov and Sarovetsky's case, they considered cylindrical geometries, which meant that they were limited in their sort of incident waves. And so if you've got a sort of a wave coming in from a circular boundary, by all the symmetry, it's naturally going to go to the null point. And that's the thing. But in our case, we can apply more general boundary conditions. And even though we find the same effect, it's sort of, that's quite an interesting thing.
I think some of their work was in Cartesian geometry, actually. But essentially, you're starting with their work and then trying to go beyond it and understand the whole process in more detail, but it is very much building on what they did before. There was a question over here. Yes.
I think that it's a very interesting or a good idea to concentrate on waiting. However, my question is about the effect of the plasma flow. So in a real teleconnection process, we have a very strong jet. from the null point. So maybe I guess that in your so model field is a magnetostatic, so not including flow. So I'd like to ask you about how about that if you put the flow that similar property is taking place.
I'm sorry, if I impose a flow along...
You impose a flow also?
If you have flow in your basic state as well, it's obviously you're obviously going to have extra effects, yeah.
Maybe so some, yeah, the flows so propagate the energy from the null point, so that it reduces the concentration effect.
That's fair enough. I guess that's an extension I can look at. That's a very interesting point. Thank you.
I understand your results. If you did the incompressible problem and you kept nonlinearities, you still get the exponential growth. It can be shown analytically.
Yes, but... Well, no, I was just going to say here I've just sort of tried to demonstrate the simple effects just to like get across the basic.
I understand. I'm just saying that your basic result that J goes like e to the power t persists. If you keep the nonlinearities in the problem, and you do the problem in
With the sort of nonlinearities, we looked at it and we thought, there'll be a sort of shock form because you've got all these, will there be a balance between shock formation and other sort of things?
Your basic result carries through.
Right.
I can show that to you.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, good. So now we move on to... Gary Arbel from the British Antarctic Survey.